From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Eric Snodgrass will be here, too, to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll get started on Commodity Week. Some of you will hear the whole of the program this afternoon. Others will hear other programming from U of I Extension, including information about next Thursday's event online, a webinar related to the opioid crisis that you can get yourself scheduled for, especially if you're a healthcare specialist or an elected official or just an official in a county. You'll want to make sure that you check that out. I'll post that into our website too, so you can find all the details for that Thursday, November 9th event. And this afternoon, we'll do one other thing. Gary Schnitke will be here to take a look at the profitability of soybeans versus corn. That means we're going to talk about the soybean to corn ratio right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to what's happened at the commodity markets in Chicago. We're joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Kind of a cold day here. It's been gray, some sunshine as well, but it looks like we're going to get some weather over the weekend. What are conditions like where you are?
Improving a bit. I just talked to a client west of Atchison, and he was able to get going again this afternoon. We've been up and down, Todd, with the colder weather and with misty rain, but I would say the crop progress numbers putting Kansas at about 80% harvested as of this past Monday is right on the money with what we're dealing with in our area and on east into northwestern Missouri.
So let's turn our attention really directly to Chicago. Why did soybeans drop 12 cents today?
I think there's a couple things going on. And one of them is the news is starting to stack up between an ag attaché report Thursday afternoon from Beijing and also some newswire commentary coming out of South America that essentially Brazil is going to come in and take away in a big way, in a bigger way than normal, our bean demand in the export market from here on out in the marketing year. And I think that's the conclusion the trade wanted to draw on Friday. I have some issues with that just from a standpoint of the cash prices. We've got the Gulf price in the United States for beans at $3.75 a ton. Brazil, Paranagua is $3.88 a ton. Memphis soybeans actually in the cash market rallied 25 cents this week, even though we put in the kind of close we did today, and we're barely up on the week, maybe a penny, penny and a half higher on the week in November. So there is a dysfunction in the fundamentals, if you ask me, Todd, that the cash market is holding up fairly well. I think there was some farmer selling in certain parts of the country that once we got up close to 990 in the futures again. But I think most of this is the fund market and the funds playing in the spreads and probably unwinding their short corn positions against their long bean positions, not just because of stochastics and momentum, but because we saw a decent change in the wheat trend this week, especially in the hard red wheat. So that's kind of how I'm going into next week's USDA report with that kind of philosophy.
Were you able to research very much what the ag attaché said and why that? I haven't seen that document. So what does it say?
Yeah, I mean, his mindset was more in the idea that our prices were going to be less competitive as time went on. Well, that's a currency issue. You know, if the Brazilian real continues to weaken, obviously that will hurt us. But his overall bias was not about South America and China and the United States so much as their domestic bean production was high enough. They would curb their rapid increases from the past 10, 15 years in the 17-18 marketing year, still grow into the mid-90s for imports for the 17-18 marketing year. It just isn't a sharp run-up like we've seen year after year after year, mainly because their domestic production did better this year. So that's kind of the bigger issue with China and the U.S. versus Brazil, I think, came more from the news wires and expectations that Brazil got caught up on planting, which they did. Brazil is now at 43%. in terms of bean planting. 5-year average is 44%, but you've still got a big, big problem in Goya's at 33% planted versus 46% on their 5-year average. So there are some, there is some positive news coming out of Brazil in terms of production potential, but did it warrant the market completely taking out this week's gains? I didn't see that.
Let me see if I can summarize these all. Dollar versus real is one thing. The Chinese supply of soybeans domestically is getting better. And they also believe that their need for soybeans is stabilizing rather than growing as fast as it has in the past. I think those are the things that you told me about that soybean market. So that's one side of the market. Now, to corn and wheat, where do we stand in your opinion?
Well, I think corn is on a waiting game. I think the two biggest numbers next week that will dictate whether we can take November into a positive move, now that we've got wheat underneath us and we've got new 2-year highs in crude oil, we had really strong energy numbers as far as lower gasoline supplies and lower diesel supplies this week. You've got a lot supporting the corn right now going into next week's numbers. Two biggest numbers are corn harvest progress and then corn yield on Thursday with USDA. The corn yield on Thursday and its sensitivity to the market, especially if USDA raises it, I think will be directly related to how far behind or how caught up we are, USDA says, on corn harvest we are on Monday. So to me, corn has a base being built thanks to the wheat and the outside markets. It's waiting for the November numbers next week from USDA.
Anything for the livestock producer today?
Big thing for the livestock producers. Fat cattle moved up almost $6.50, and then the hogs in the Dease contract moved up about 75 cents. And so it kind of shows you that the packer was short bought. Don't overstay your welcome on being a bull in the cattle at this stage. Your cattle hog spread is at $62 premium to the cattle. That's triple where we were in July. So if you've got your hogs locked in, great. Be ready to lock your cattle in next week, maybe as early as then.
I suppose I ought to check back with the grains and the oil seeds. Is there anything new that you have in the way of advice for producers?
I think the biggest thing that I wrote this week that could help the listener is the chicken and the egg thing with the corn. Does the futures rally first or does the basis rally first because we have inclement weather in the upper Midwest and the northern Corn Belt? With the wheat acting the way it is and the fact that the hard red wheat especially jumped 14 cents this week off of its lows because of, in part, we had Kansas being talked about as dropping their wheat acres, maybe even another 10% from where they were last year, that I think opens the door up for the futures to rally first, the basis to come later after we get harvest wrapped up.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlo with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Do drop by our website at willag.org and pick up your tickets to the Farm Assets Conference. It's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving. All the details are right there at willag.org, or you can call 800-898-1065. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. For 4 years in a row, farmers in Illinois, other parts of the nation too, have made more money on soybeans than corn. The numbers are pretty clear, and University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke lays them out in an online FarmDoc Daily article. He says, on average, soybeans have been more profitable than corn since 2013.
One of the things that we've seen is that soybean to corn prices have been relatively strong for the soybean since 2013. And, you know, the ratio of soybean to corn prices was 2.74 since 2013, and it was 2.42 before that. So we've seen soybean prices increase relative to corn prices.
And farmers have responded to the price. When you look at historic price ratio changes, it's relatively easy to see when demand has pushed one crop over the other. The corn-based ethanol buildup, for instance, from 2006 to 2013, has a soybean to corn price ratio of 2.42. That means the price of soybeans is 2.42 times greater than the price of corn. Well, ethanol plants were being built around the United States at this time, and there was a big need for more bushels of corn. Farmers responded and planted more corn. That need is now leveled off. At the same time, China has been continually increasing its need for soybeans. Today, the soybean to corn ratio is 2.72. This ratio continually changes, says Schnittke.
We've seen in the past, soybean and corn have roughly the same revenue, and that happened in the late 1980s. So it has happened in the past. I think we're going to continue to see soybeans at least as profitable to corn for the foreseeable future, and part of what's driving that is the continued strong demand for soybeans exports. So we have this growing demand for exports of soybeans. So as long as that's there, we're going to be continually trying to pull acres into soybeans.
Well, just an FYI, the long-term soybean-to-corn ratio, 1972 to present, is 2.55. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, an all-day event in Normal. The cost is just $35, and that includes your meal and the parking next to the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Should be a great show. 800-898-1065 or online at willag.org. Now, let's follow up that conversation we had with Gary Schnittke about soybeans. We discussed that a whole lot with the folks that were on Commodity Week when we recorded yesterday afternoon, including Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds. I started by asking Ellen about the livestock complex and the size of the herd across the United States, since it's related to inputs like corn and soybeans and domestic usage.
Well, we have demand for red meat products, particularly into the export market right now. I noticed on Thursday morning's export bookings, we had another wonderful week of exports of both beef and pork. And keep in mind that that has to be continue to support these large numbers that are coming at us both on the pork and the cattle side of things. We certainly have had a big upside move, an explosive move in the cattle, but I think that was mostly fund-related, not very fundamental. We've also had some upside in the hogs. Poultry numbers are pretty flat, but that... you know, we're certainly moving a lot more corn through beef and pork.
So domestically, we've got good demand for the livestock side. Ethanol on the high end of things, I think. Matt, you tend to watch those numbers. Mr. Bennett, what do you see?
Well, you know, ethanol numbers yesterday is as high as what we've seen in quite some time. You know, we were fairly laggard there for a while here this fall, which was surprising to me. You know, I thought that maybe we would get ramped up a little bit quicker than what we did. But certainly, I think, you know, using 108.5 million bushels of corn last week just for ethanol is certainly something very impressive. And so, you know, I think that if we continue to churn out those sort of production figures, I think that it definitely does nothing to hurt the situation, because obviously we've got plenty of corn on hand at this point.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, as you think about that domestic usage and the number of bushels of corn that are being harvested this fall, and some of the numbers that have been coming out as it relates to next week's USDA crop production figure, can we maintain the price of corn at current levels?
Well, it's been amazing that we've been able to. We tried the lows again, last week and couldn't make new ones. We tried it the week before and couldn't. We made the lows, 10 weeks ago, down at that 42, 43. We get down close to it, and we bounce back over 50 like today. I mean, we hit 43 earlier in the week, and here we are back at 50.5. So usage is, I think, the secret, that ethanol that we talked about. Our exports aren't as good as we'd like, but we still have good ones. But we do have lots of it lying around, and I think just the idea that we're going to use it is in the minds of people, and that's been helping hold that corn price higher.
And I suppose, Pete, it doesn't hurt that this has been a fairly slow harvest, relatively speaking, and that the pipeline doesn't get really clogged up with all of the corn coming in, though there are plenty of grain piles around.
There's plenty of grain piles, but as you go north, there's lots of corn yet. What are we? Are we 40% still in the field, or how much got harvested to here in all this rainy weather? But there's still lots of it. And some of it's going to be there a while as you go further north. Talking to customers today, further north, their moisture's still 25%.
So it'll take some time to bring some of that corn out. Does this impact the seasonals very much in your mind, Dan Zwicker?
Not at this time. I mean, seasonally, when you have a big crop like we have, the corn market usually will be pretty much of a sideways to maybe even a sideways to slightly lower as you go into December deliveries. So it'll be interesting. You know, probably what's going to happen here is as we get closer to Thanksgiving, December corn is going to break down toward the bottom end of its trading range, and then March corn is going to maybe become the functional lead futures contract toward the upper end of this range that we've been in between, you know, 340 and 360. So if anything, I would say that the big crop tells me that Dease corn might not be able to do anything until we get into expiration, get it off the board, and then March becomes the functional lead. And then that will lead us through the winter time frame.
Ellen Dearden, next week we do have USDA crop production numbers due out. FC Stone and Informa both threw out really big numbers for corn. Do you think that 173 and above will be around?
I don't know whether it will or it won't. Probably doesn't matter a whole lot. The board reacted pretty positively despite those big numbers. I want to go back and make a comment, too, about corn piles and on the demand side of things. I am seeing in the Pekin Peoria area train loads of corn coming into this area from Iowa. It is very typical to see that into the ethanol plants each week, but we're seeing two trains a week rather than one train a week coming into particular plants. The other thing I'm picking up from merchandisers in the St. Louis area is trains of corn coming in from the Western Corn Belt at cheap prices into St. Louis and going down the river from there. That's a little bit out of the ordinary kind of movement that we're seeing, but there's no corn moving. Notice the last 4 weeks, we've not seen a shipment of corn out of the Pacific Northwest. So I think we need to keep in mind that the Western Corn Belt movement has got to pick up in order to get this corn price rocking and rolling.
Ellen Dearden is with AgriView out of Morton, Illinois. Joined us on our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon. For some of you, you'll hear the rest of it in just a few minutes here on our home station. The rest of you can pick it up online anytime you'd like at willag.org or over the weekend on many of these radio stations. Ellen was joined by Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds. We'll be back in just a couple minutes to take a look at the agriculture weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's the Tuesday prior to Thanksgiving, and we'll have on hand with us Eric Snodgrass from Agrible to take an in-depth look at the weather forecast. In fact, he's near now, as he usually is on a Friday afternoon. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for being with us and for coming to the Farm Assets Conference, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to kind of figure out what the rest of winter is going to be like and then get that first kind of spring forecast in once we get to that point in November.
Should be a good day. You can pick your tickets up right now at willag.org. They're just $35 or at 800-898-1065. Let's talk about, Eric, weather for the next several days here. We've been kind of up and down in temperatures and sunshine and rain. What's up next?
Yeah, it has been a roller coaster ride. And honestly, we've just had repeated shots of cold air followed by these brief warm-ups. And we're in for another warm-up coming up pretty soon. In fact, we had a fun kind of thing to discuss in my classes yesterday, and that we had what's called a 6Z low. So if you remember this, going into Thursday morning, we had temperatures basically rising all night long. So the high temperature on Wednesday was technically set at midnight because of that warm air advection. And that's the thing that I'm kind of keen in on over the weekend. So my biggest concern is that by the time we get into Sunday, we're going to see a frontal boundary, a cold front that's going to stretch across parts of the Corn Belt, really going right through the heart of Illinois into parts of Indiana, Michigan, even back toward Missouri. And out ahead of that, by the time we get to Sunday, we're going to see some pretty strong southerly winds that are going to bring in moisture, and we're going to be able to destabilize the atmosphere. And that means that when that front starts to lift the air, it will lift it into an unstable atmosphere. Long story short, that means we have a severe weather risk. Now, severe weather risk in November is a lot more rare than it is, of course, during the summer. And why I'm getting concerned about this is that, yeah, we're expecting some strong storms, but we still have quite a bit of corn still in the field that needs to get harvested. And as these storms kind of come through, I'm worried about, some of those corn stains that are left over in parts of Indiana and Illinois, Ohio, and southern Michigan, because with some strong winds, we may do some damage there. And in addition to that, the rain that's going to come with this system, is going to hit a part of the Corn Belt that's been quite wet. And I just took a look the last 30 days through parts of Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, Michigan, and even parts of Wisconsin have been well over 150% of normal in rainfall. Now, just because I know this will be fresh in some of our listeners' ears, I want to make sure that we know that the setup right now is not quite as conducive to the development of massive severe storms like we had in November 2013. Remember, that was when we had that big Washington, Illinois tornado that caused a lot of damage. So we're not looking at a setup like that, but some strong storms certainly on their way. Oh, and don't forget, we fall back on this this Sunday. So daylight saving time ends. And with the ending of daylight saving time, we have severe weather and then a big shot of cold air coming in next week.
Oh, an Arctic plunge, maybe?
Yeah, that's what the pattern's doing right now. We are watching closely for the position of this big ridge over the Bering Sea. And just to give you a little geography primer here, that's just to the west of Alaska. So the Bering Sea, that particular region, tends to kind of help govern the overall flow of the jet stream almost throughout the entire year. And what I've been seeing, and we've been talking about this for a while, is big ridge there. And that really sets us up to have a broader trough over kind of eastern Canada. And we just keep getting these shortwave troughs. These are cold air, pockets of cold air aloft that keeps zipping through the northern tier of states. And they come through and get us. And when that happens, our temperatures just plunge. And then after they go by, they warm back up again. So this roller coaster ride we're on, I don't see it ending before Thanksgiving. It's just going to be an up, down, up, down. And where I'm concerned is with that eastern Corn Belt just staying wet. So that's you're right there. We're not getting out of that pattern anytime soon.
We'd better check in on South America as well. What do you see?
Well, we've been talking for the last month or so about how the northern growing regions and especially the eastern growing regions have been very dry, while the southern growing regions in Brazil have been very wet. We talked about how that's been delaying planting. Well, what we call the South American Convergence Zone, that's basically the major player in the Brazilian monsoon, that has now really kind of established the way that we would expect it to. So we're expecting quite a bit of rain, especially for those drier regions over the next 10 days or so. But our latest projections for yields, we have a statistical model that we use to forecast yields down there early in the season. It's dropped over what we had preseason. And so now we're looking at, a lot closer to average yields, maybe slightly below trend yields. But what's important to remember about South America is that even if they do have a bit of a hit on their yields this year, certainly they got in late, but if they have a bit of a hit on their yields, this will still be the second largest crop that'll come out of the country. So, if they had their infrastructure together and they were able to move that grain faster, this would be a much bigger player on our global, especially our soybean market. I think the bigger thing that we need to think about here is that the markets know this. So they've already kind of sensed this is the case. But I think what will be interesting to see change will be how that safrinha crop goes in, if there's any delay in that, and what that might mean for corn prices as we start off our spring.
Hey, thanks for all the information, Eric.
Yep, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.